Hello and welcome. You're watching The Buck Stops here at an all-new time of 8 p.m. I'm Barkha Dutt. The big story tonight. In all the noise around the Agusta controversy, one story has gone unnoticed. The government has quietly buried one of its most contentious and debated policies, the red line around the Hurriyat conference that became the basis twice for calling off talks with Pakistan. It was called the new tough Modi Pakistan policy, but the government has now told Parliament that the separatists are Indian citizens. They're free to meet whoever they want to. On the program later today, a big debate will be whether the tough-talking Narendra Modi government has received a reality check on its Pakistan policy. That debate coming up in a moment from now. Also at 8:30 tonight, our game changer, our newsmaker, a young woman whose video has gone viral. She's a 19-year-old daughter of a Kargil hero. She began as somebody who says she equated all Muslims with Pakistanis and thought they were out to get her. How did this young girl become a peace activist, and what's this video about that's got everybody's imagination? That's coming up at 8:30.
It's brutal. War is brutal. Nobody tells you about what happened. Everybody talks about, you know, war and passing away and being a shaheed, but nobody tells you what happens to the families. And I feel like there shouldn't be any more girls like me.
All right, a lot packed into the 60 minutes, but the lead tonight, an exclusive by my colleague Siddharth Pandey. We continue to track the twists and turns of the Agusta chopper scam, where the Gandhis are now directly in the firing line. In the following report, we bring you an untold story. What was an Agusta middleman, Hashke, Guido Hashke, doing as a director of a corporate firm, MRMGF, a company incidentally also implicated in the Commonwealth Games scam? Well, BJP MP Kirit Sumaya says he's been writing to the Enforcement Directorate for several years. He first began writing these letters in 2013, alleging that there was a direct Gandhi link. According to the BJP MP, Rahul Gandhi's aide Kanishk Singh's family is directly linked to the firm MRMGF, which mysteriously employed a middleman as its director for a short period. Nobody quite knows why. Here's Siddharth Pandey bringing you the lead on The Buck Stops here.
A new twist in the Augusta Westland chopper scam. This man, Guido Hashke, the middleman accused of playing a key role in the payoffs in the 3600 crore chopper deal, could bode further trouble for the Gandhis. BJP MP Kirit Somaiya today launched an attack directly on Rahul Gandhi over Hashke's appointment as a director in the firm MRMGF, founded by the family of Rahul's close aide Kanishka Singh.
Will Rahul Gandhi refuse, deny that he and Kanishka have a closer relationship, and Kanishka is an important person? His family is the founder of MRMGF. Will Rahul Gandhi will respond that Hashke is a director in that company? Why and how he has been there? Is it a coincidence that the Italian government has named Gandhi, Hashke, that company? So what are the facts that Gandhi Parivar should clarify?
Kirit Somaiya says that he had written to the CBI and the Enforcement Directorate about Hashke and MRMGF in 2013, but nothing moved in the previous government. On September 25, 2009, Hashke was appointed as a non-executive director on MRMGF's board, a company started by VP Gupta, the grandfather of Kanish Singh, close confidant of Congress Vice President Rahul Gandhi. Kanish Singh had earlier in 2013, when the BJP had raised the issue about Hashke's presence in MRMGF, denied any links with the company. Nothing to do with MR or Agusta, and fell out with the family in 2005. While Hashke was on board for 2 months, when contacted by NDTV, MRMGF said that he was only appointed at the time of its IPO, and the company has no association with him or his business associates other than this. Hashke did not attend any board meeting during his tenure of appointment, and in fact has never visited our offices at any time, nor has had any meetings with any of our officials at any time, according to a spokesperson of MRMGF. Hashke, now believed to be living in this house in Lugano, a small Swiss town resort, is currently out of reach of Indian authorities. It was on the basis of his tapped phone conversations and several documents recovered from him during a raid by police in Switzerland in 2013 that formed the backbone of Italian investigations, and the conviction of the former CEO of Augusta Westland for international corruption and fraud.
My only appeal is rather than making allegations, come out with the full details.
The BJP turning up the heat on the Augusta Westland scandal. In fact, it's taking the battle straight to the Gandhi family. The pitch is only going to rise over the next couple of days, with the government saying it will lay out all the key facts and all the key documents on the floor of the House when the defense minister makes a statement on this in Parliament on Wednesday. In New Delhi, Siddharth Pandey for NDTV.
All right, and in a new twist to that story, breaking here on The Lead, and every night we'll be bringing you a lead story on the buck stops here. In fact, Kirit Somaiya, Member of Parliament with the BJP, who first raised this issue with the Enforcement Directorate in 2013, says that he has not seen the Enforcement Directorate moving on this case at all. For several years now, he has been asking for movement for the Enforcement Directorate to probe the link between what he calls Guido Haske, the Augusta middleman, and Rahul Gandhi's aide Kanishk Singh. Kanishk Singh, of course, denying these links and making the argument that yes, these are relatives who own the company. However, Kanishk Singh making the point that since 2005, there has been an estrangement between the part of the family that in fact runs MRMGF. But a lot of questions there for the Gandhis, with Kirit Somaiya saying that he will be bringing this up in Parliament. In fact, a note that we've just received from Kirit Somaiya says to us, and we'll be bringing you this letter as we continue to follow this story, says that his last reminder to the Enforcement Directorate was sent on the 30th of April, which is like, what, two days ago, and he has yet to receive a response from the Enforcement Directorate. All right, that's The Lead on The Buck Stops Here. We'll bring you more on this developing story as we have it. Moving on now to our other big talking point tonight. It's a story that should have been in the headlines, but strangely hasn't. Was it unnoticed because the government quietly placed a written reply in Parliament? It was a direct question to General V.K. Singh. How did the government respond to meetings between the Pakistan High Commissioner Abdul Basit and Kashmiri separatists? Of course, people would remember that twice, not just once, but twice, high-level talks between India and Pakistan were actually called off because the Pakistan High Commissioner and Pakistani delegates were meeting with Kashmiri separatists. It was called Narendra Modi's new red line, a new tough Pakistan policy. Now, in a written reply, General V.K. Singh has in fact said that these separatists are Indian citizens because all of Jammu and Kashmir is an integral part of the Indian Union, and by that definition, they are free to meet the representatives of any country. He has, of course, added in his reply that there is no place for a third party at the dialogue table, but it is a major, major, major shift, quietly done perhaps to attract least attention. Is this the win of pragmatism over polemics, or is this the central paradox of Modi's Pakistan policy? On the panel today, Chandan Mitra, Rajya Sabha Member of Parliament of the BJP, is with us. Also joining me from Srinagar today, Tanveer Sadiq. He's a National Conference leader. The National Conference reacting strongly, saying the government has been forced to admit its mistake. With me in the studio, Sushil Pandit. He's, of course, a writer, a commentator, but also a Kashmiri Pandit in exile. And, of course, Ambassador K.C. Singh, well-known diplomat, is on the program. Chandan, how do you explain this?
Well, I don't think that this is such a dramatic development as you are making it out to be. Now, the fact is that these Hurriyat people keep coming to Delhi, and coincidentally, or perhaps not so coincidentally, every time there is a Pakistani delegation in India. But you must not forget that they have also been the past, during Atalji's time for that matter, been to Pakistan to talk to Pakistan government spokespersons or other leaders in Pakistan territory. Mr. V.K. Singh is absolutely right that these people are citizens of India. They carry Indian passports. They go out of India on various activities with the government of India's permission, because as Indian citizens, they are free to move.
All now, that is fine, but in 2014,
is another matter.
Chandan, in 2014, yeah, this is, yeah, what the Ministry of External Affairs said at the time. This is a red line we have drawn. We have told Pakistan, you either talk to us or you talk to them. You know that twice One's foreign secretary level talks, one NSA talks were actually called off. If this is the position of the government today, and some would say it's a wiser position, would you at least concede that you made a mistake earlier?
No. I don't.
And when I say mistake, I mean you took an unrealistic position.
Sorry?
You took an unrealistic position.
No, I don't think so. I think that it may happen again. If, for instance, there is a Pakistani delegation in Delhi and they want to meet the Hurriyat people before they meet the government of India, I think the government of India will have every reason to be peeved. It can happen again. But what Mr. V.K. Singh was laying down, General V.K. Singh was laying down, was that they are all Indian citizens, even if they claim that they are separatists. And therefore, as Indian citizens, they cannot be denied the rights available to every other Indian
citizen.
Let me get in others. Sushil Pandit, go ahead and then I'll go to Tanveer Sadiq.
No, it wasn't this issue of their citizenship which was in dispute. The issue is whether they are a party to the negotiations and discussions and whether government of India will allow them space between India and Pakistan dialogue. Now, on that issue, what is the position? And Mr. Singh, in fact, in ample measure, I don't know whether it clears the confusion or confounds it further, says, while Hurriyat is free to meet Pakistan, Pakistan cannot meet Hurriyat and meddle in our internal relations. I don't know what kind of logic is this.
So, for you, what is the central contradiction here, Sushil, before I bring in other reactions? Yeah.
I think there is a lack of clarity in what policy to follow. And this is not just at the apex where foreign ministry is concerned or diplomacy is concerned. It is even at the level in Kashmir where the chief of Jammu and Kashmir state BJP, after addressing a rally in Anantnag when issues a press release, calls it Anantnag stroke Islamabad. Of all the parties, BJP calling Anantnag Islamabad in a written communique.
It
has got published in today's Tribune.
We can Chandan respond to that in just a moment from now. But to explore these contradictions a little further, the National Conference, Tanveer, is of course taking the position that this is belated wisdom. Would it be fair to describe your position as that? Whereas Sushil is saying this should never happen, it betrays confusion. You are saying this is belated wisdom.
Are you asking me, Bharta?
Yeah. Yes, Tanveer, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, first of all, you know, I welcome this admission of misjudgment by the central government. I mean, this is a vindication of our point of view that, you know, from the day one, we've been saying that center's position has been wrong and gross overreaction. Now, good sense has prevailed, but since Chandan Mitra is sitting there, I don't want to just digress. I just want to ask three important questions too. Just give me 5 seconds.
Yeah, okay.
They say,
why did
New Delhi ask late Mufti Saab to arrest these Indian citizens in Srinagar to prevent them from traveling to Delhi to meet the Pakistan diplomats?
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, why was the meeting of Hurriyat leaders and Pakistan diplomats used as a reason to call off the talks with Hurriyat earlier by the central government? Didn't it consider Hurriyat leaders to be Indian citizens then? And the third, if the reason for calling off talks with the Pakistan was now admittedly wrong, will the BJP as well as their ally PDP accept that they were wrong and take responsibility?
Okay,
I want Chandan Mitra.
We will put those to Chandan in just a moment. Ambassador Casey is saying this is a paradox, but do you believe that this is pragmatism winning or do you believe this is continued confusion? Because one of the things we haven't commented on is that this is the same General V.K. Singh who actually, when he was sent to be a government representative at the Pakistan High Commission where Kashmiri separatists were present, famously tweeted two words. One was disgust, one was duty. He was clearly disgusted at being present at the Pakistan High Commission. Now the same General V.K. Singh has had to articulate this U-turn.
Another bit of duty
or disgust, we don't know what he'll tweet. Yeah. Ambassador Casey saying then lots of questions stacking up for Chandan, will allow Casey to come in. Yeah.
You see, I'm glad you raised this. I was going to add it to the two other examples you gave earlier.
Yes.
Unfortunately, what has happened is when it was raised for the first time, many of us both wrote and spoke on the television, you do not in diplomacy place red lines so blatantly because then it becomes a stumbling block. And if you have placed them, particularly a red line that Pakistan would find very difficult in public to disavow. So that had put you in a corner. Now the question is, how do you get out of it? So tactically, I think what is happening is the BJP-led government, NDA government, has been tactical. They take tactically one position, then they try coming out of it. So therefore, the Pakistan policy, you have to put in the context of how they've dealt with Pakistan.
Yeah.
The low points have been Nepal, UN, cancellation of foreign secretary talks.
Yeah.
High points are PM goes to Lahore, he meets at Ufa and Bangkok.
Yeah.
So you find there's a cyclical thing. Now you have to understand why is the cycle there. Now at the moment, why are they doing it?
Yeah.
And don't forget that just a couple of days ago, the National Security Advisor, the so-called hawk in the establishment, suddenly said the intentions of the Pakistani investigators can't be doubted. They're very nice people.
Yeah.
Now this itself was very surprising coming from Doval.
Yeah.
So why are they doing it now?
So why are they doing it according to you, KC?
No, just very quickly.
Why are they doing it according to you?
One is very quick. Yeah, very quickly. One is they have a coalition government in Srinagar. Was that a precondition which PDP imposed when they joined it?
Absolutely.
After all, they took a long time to come together. Secondly, Prime Minister is going and addressing the US Congress. Now, is this, does he want to now present himself as a statesman? Now, you know, the trouble is that when you do these things tactically, it confuses both your constituency in India as well as the public at large.
So, I need Chandan to come
in
on that.
What is your strategy? Chandan, why do you do flip-flops?
Chandan, the flip-flops is the point. You can't deny that there is a flip-flop. You may say the importance given to it by me or some other people in the media is not something you agree with, but it's a change. And diplomats and governments are allowed to shift positions. We understand that. But you have to acknowledge that it's a change. Now, the question that came from National Conference's Tanveer Sadiq for you was that if this is your position, why were Kashmiri separatists placed under house arrest at one point when you actually went that far to prevent them from coming to Delhi to meet the Pakistanis?
Shabir Shah was detained in Delhi.
Exactly.
He managed to reach Delhi.
So if they are Indian citizens free to meet anybody, why weren't they free to do so then, Chandan?
Well, I think I will not disagree with the perspective given by KC Singh and what you, Barkha, are also suggesting, that there is a change.
Yes.
And governments absolutely are entitled to change.
Yes, they are. As long as they admit the change.
And explain it.
Yeah. As long as they admit the change.
No, why not necessary to, not necessary to say, because, you know, there has to be some constancy and general kind of flow in government policy. Mr. Modi has from day one taken a view that we shall try to normalize relations with Pakistan. This began with his swearing in as Prime Minister. And since then, he has taken some unilateral steps, like going to Nawaz Sharif's granddaughter's wedding and so on.
So do you accept you are wrong?
So then what is then?
Tanveer, what's your question? Tanveer Sadiq's question to Chandan Mitra.
My question is, if he is saying that there is a change in the thinking, but does he admit that he was wrong before? Because we've been saying that this was gross overreaction by the central government when they arrested them. You need to talk.
You invite
the Prime Minister on your swearing
in.
Then you call off the talks. Again you start talking. Again, this flip-flop has been going all over. What we were always saying, that you need to talk. You need to get Hurriyat on board and talk. What I'm asking, Chandan, is are you admitting on the show that you were wrong, your policy was wrong?
No. What's the question of wrong? It is the Congress government which also wanted to talk to the Hurriyat. The Hurriyat people came here.
I'll
allow Sushil to come in. Chandan, I'll tell you what the question is. The question is that people suggested. Let me ask a question. Let me build up on what he's saying. Maybe that'll be clearer. There was a suggestion that under Mr. Modi, it was going to be different.
Absolutely.
It was not going to be Manmohan Singh's Kashmir/Pakistan policy or Pakistan policy. It was not even going to be Vajpayee's Kashmir or Pakistan policy. Sushil Pandit, quick response to Chandan Mitra, then Mirwais Farooq will be on the phone with us in just a moment. Yeah.
In fact, this was one of the key issues in the run-up to the campaign and the campaign itself. This formed one of the major body of arguments for the NDA to come to power, because India had been namby-pamby in its response to Pakistan. But what has happened after 18th of August, which was drawing of the red line and almost equal to what the campaign sought India's policy to be, from 23rd of February, just a week before coalition took office in Jammu and Kashmir, and then 3rd and 4th of March.
So you're seeing this as a reflection of the coalition resuming in Jammu and Kashmir?
In fact, that watershed is for a whole lot of other policy shifts. Policy shift in Kashmir, political shift,
okay,
and diplomatic measures thereafter.
Okay, can you just hold that thought for just a second, Chandan? I know you have a lot to respond to, but a quick comment from Mirwais Omar Farooq, who is, of course, a Hurriyat Conference representative. Mirwais Omar Farooq, you've, of course, seen General V.K. Singh's statement in Parliament. You have welcomed it. You have seen this as an acknowledgement that the position taken earlier could neither work in what you call siyasat or diplomacy. Your comments, because when you welcome this statement, the fact is they're still rejecting, your role as a third party at the table. But do you see a distinct shift with this statement in Parliament?
Well, I think, first of all, Barkha, I mean, we need to understand that, we have said in our press conference also, that, in politics and in diplomacy, red lines don't work. And I think better sense seems to have prevailed over the BJP leadership, that the approach they have adopted, when Mr. Modi came to power, is not going to work. I think, every one of us has to understand Kashmir is a political problem. It's not an administrative or a governance issue. Hmm. And it's a problem between India, Pakistan, and the people of Jammu and Kashmir. So the Hurriyat has always been very focused on the fact that India, Pakistan, while they are important stakeholders, they are the ones who are controlling the territory, but they also have to take along the people of Kashmir, and that has been our position all along. And I think even when Mr. Vajpayee was the Prime Minister, he duly acknowledged the fact that Kashmir has to be not viewed from an administrative angle. It's not an economic issue. It's not a sadak bijli pani problem. It's a political problem.
Okay, but may I ask you, Mirwais Omar Farooq, you say this is an acknowledgement that the previous position was not working, but I do remember that you had dialogue with L.K. Advani when he was Deputy Prime Minister. Yes. So let's forget Pakistan for a moment. Let's talk about an internal dialogue, right? So do we see, if you see in this statement a softening of the government, would it be fair to say that maybe there's something alive in the back channel, or if they were to reach out, you would talk to them? Because one thing that really bothers a lot of people in India is that you talk to the Pakistanis, but you don't talk to us. And when I say us, India, the country in which you live in, you all hold Indian passports.
You have to understand, Barkha. I mean, the Hurriyat Conference has all along been saying that we want to engage. We want to engage with both India as well as Pakistan. And Hurriyat was the one who went to Delhi to talk to Mr. Advani. We went to meet Mr. Vajpayee. Yeah. And it was a consensus at that time that, yes, while India will engage with the Hurriyat Conference, India will also allow the Hurriyat Conference to go to Pakistan. They provide us passports. We went to Pakistan. We started a process of what we call a triangular dialogue, where India and Pakistan were talking, where Pakistan and Kashmir were talking.
But it was never formalized as such. India, under Congress or BJP, has never recognized a tripartite dialogue, though the Hurriyat... Like, Chandan, go ahead. Those are the comments.
One quick comment.
Yeah.
You see, whom does the Hurriyat represent? We don't know. They have never contested an election, and it is widely known that their influence does not go beyond downtown Srinagar. So, on what basis are they demanding? No, because you are a party. You are a party. Mr. Advani and Mr. Vajpayee and Mr. Modi today would meet representatives of any political party. But to prove you have a significant role in the Kashmir issue, you have to prove what is your legitimacy. What is your legitimacy?
Can I just make a point, then you can all react? Mirwais Omar Farooq, I know the panel does want to react, but the point simply is, if Mr. Modi or Mr. Doval or anybody in the Prime Minister's office or in the Home Ministry or through an interlocutor were to pick up the phone and call you, would you go and meet them just as you went and met Mr. Advani?
See, I think, Barkha, the fact is that the Hurriyat Conference has always welcomed any initiative which is aimed at resolving the problem, resolving the issue.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is, right now, look at the policy, look at the approach. I mean, we are being confined to our houses. I mean, in the last 30 days, I have been 15 days under house arrest. I mean, I'm not allowed to go to the mosque. Even, you know, religious conferences are being banned. They are giving us no space on the ground. I mean, I give a press conference today that, you know, that every Friday there is, you know, people of the Jama Masjid area are being targeted.
But that speaks to the contradiction of what we are talking about here.
The government needs to have a clear-cut policy. Do they want to address Kashmir politically or militarily? Do they want to suppress the voice of the people through brute force? Or they want to...
Let me put that to the panel now. Sushil Pandit, go ahead. Thank you, Mirwaiz Omar Farooq. Okay.
When they do get space, what do they do with that space? On 24th of March, he was in Delhi. A day after attending the National Day celebrations of Pakistan, he offers India advice that we should move on from Pathankot, less than 3 months after that carnage.
But, Ambassador K.C. Singh, yes, that's the whole...
Is that the kind of role they're playing Pakistan's stooge? At every given opportunity, Hurriyat plays Pakistani stooge.
But can I ask you a question on this? The fact is that in previous NDA government, at the highest level, the deputy prime minister of a BJP government did what a Congress government had never done. They met with the Hurriyat conference. Mirwaiz Omar Farooq was at that meeting. There are some who would say you need the Vajpayee back in the Kashmir policy. Is this VK Singh statement a sign of that, or is it a sign of confusion to you?
I think it is confusion compounded. At that time, if it was at all done, in hindsight, it was a mistake legitimizing these rogues in Kashmir who are responsible for genocide there.
You can't, Sushil Pandit.
Listen, I'm sorry, let me finish.
Hold your breath. Ready to talk to people.
I am willing to talk to people, but the people should show attitude. People should show
desire. On your show, Sambit Patra was the BJP spokesperson, and when I asked him, why aren't you talking to Hurriyat, why did you call up the talks, he said, this government is different, Mr. Modi is a strict man, he will not talk to anyone. Yeah. And suddenly the statement from VK Singh comes, and he says that now we will speak.
Precisely.
So you have to change your outlook.
Sir, it is not my outlook.
There are three different discussions. May I just come in here?
I'm just
trying to frame the debate. I'll get you and then Ambassador K.C. Singh. There are three different discussions here. One is the BJP's flip-flop. The second is, what is the best approach to initiating a sustainable peace process within the Kashmir Valley? And the third is, how much importance should be given to the Hurriyat? We have to actually argue all of these three separately because they're not necessarily interconnected. You maintain the BJP has flip-flopped. That disappoints you. A Tanveer Sadiq says it's belated wisdom. A Mirwaiz Omar Farooq says it's belated wisdom. The fact is, if there is a political problem and you acknowledge there is one, does it not have to be dealt politically? Is this not belated wisdom by the Modi government?
Do you not
have to engage with the fact that there is a separatist sentiment in the valley and the Hurriyat, love it or hate it, represents that or a slice of that?
Hurriyat is not just a separatist sentiment. Hurriyat is an ideology to dismember India, and they make no bones about
but
it.
But if you know, A.S. Dhullar, former RANW chief, writes in his book that both Indian and Pakistan intelligence agencies have financed separatists in an effort to engage them.
Yes, they have.
Making the argument that, you know, agencies do this everywhere in the world. So clearly, Delhi has also tried to engage with them repeatedly. So I want to come... So that's what I'm saying. We have to separate the peace process aspect from the BJP aspect. Ambassador K.C. Singh, very polarizing views. Tanveer and Sushil have absolutely opposite views on exactly the same policy. How do you see it? K.C.?
Barkha, I think it was a mistake after a very successful election in Jammu and Kashmir to make an issue out of the Hurriyat meeting with Pakistan. From our point of view, they are not representatives of the people of Pakistan when they don't participate in an election. So either our election process is bogus, or we say those are the validly elected people, which is the government of Jammu and Kashmir. So if Pakistan's representatives are the Hurriyat, then certainly India should broaden the debate and say, fine, we will talk to you too, but our real representative is the Chief Minister of Jammu and Kashmir.
Yeah.
And the people who have been elected there. And that should be the argument. Instead of going down that route, the government, by bringing Hurriyat issue into the forefront, gave them legitimacy, gave them prominence, they mainstreamed them at a time when they had been sidelined, and brought them on the national and international stage. It was a serious mistake. But if they had done it, then they should, when they climb down, they should explain to the public in India. All governments are entitled to change their policies, but they are answerable to the people of India and explain the transition.
What would be, Casey, your question to Chandan? Because, you know, you believe the mistake was earlier. Sushil Pandit believes the mistake is now. So, you know, the BJP, in a sense, as I see it politically, is caught in this paradox. Mr. Modi would like, as you said, to appear as a statesman and that be his legacy. But he's got his own constituency politically, his more hawkish constituency, some would say, his more hardline, his more, you know, native constituency to answer to politically. So, Ambassador Keshi Singh, isn't that a problem for a politician?
Look, you can't be statesman part-time. There's no such thing as a part-time statesman. Mm. Either you are a statesman or you're not. You know, I have worked closely with Mr. Vajpayee. He would take the pressure. Statesmen do not always come on the stage and take initiatives. But they don't also recant and retreat. They take a position, then they hold it. But they don't take harsh positions or hard positions. Because statesmen realize that you can't be too far ahead of the public opinion or history. You can't be too far behind it. That's what a statesman is. But you can't be flip-flopping from one to the other, a statesman one day and not a statesman
the next day. I think that's a fair point, Chandan, that you can't be the 56-inch Prime Minister who promised a more muscular Pakistan policy and then be Vajpayee 2.0. Which one is the Prime Minister? I think that's the question.
There are two aspects. There is no question of being a hardliner and insisting on a kind of militaristic posture as far as the domestic issue of Jammu and Kashmir is concerned. It is part of our country. The whole of Jammu and Kashmir is part of India. And therefore, even if there are some people who are trying to create mischief there and who are kind of born and brought up in mischief like the Huriyat, you have to deal with them gradually, patiently and not purely from a point of
sight. How do you explain the timing of the change? Do you accept it honestly, as you often do, and it sometimes lands you in a soup, but you know that's why we like you, because you're a journalist first and then a neta. You accepted there's a change. How do you explain the timing, Chandan, of the change? Like Casey thinks it's to do with Mr. Modi appearing at the US Congress or the resumption of the coalition government in JNK. That this is, in a sense, Mehbooba's pound of flesh. This is what she wanted, and so it's happening.
Well, why should we look at it at Mehbooba's pound of flesh? The fact that BJP and PDP are together running a government, which some people would have been kind of somersaulting in their graves or urn only a few years ago, that has been made possible.
All right.
Under Modi's prime ministership, this is happening. So let us say that we are under Mr. Modi's statesman-like goal of resolving the Kashmir problem once and for all, some things may happen, and don't expect recantations, coming on stage and doing theatrics. These are not part of diplomacy. They are not part of.
Okay, I'm on my last 5 minutes, so I'll allow Tanveer and Sushil to come in with questions for you. Tanveer Sadiq, go ahead.
Thankfully, you know, better sense has prevailed on them, and they have corrected themselves. And they, like he says, Chandan Mitra, that, you know, there's a change of thought. But, you know, Kashmir has both internal and external dimensions. If you see the lack of engagement between the center, you know, on the external front has created a lot of anxiety in the state. So I believe that the only thing right now they can do is that they walk the talk. It shouldn't be like today V.K. Singh says one thing, tomorrow another leader comes out and says nothing. Because I remember, like I said, Chandan Mitra says one point, his another spokesman will come out and saying that, you know, we are strong, we won't talk to Huriyat. You have made Huriyat, so you need to talk to them.
What do you mean you have made Huriyat? What does that mean, Tanveer?
Made as in you created the huge issue when, you know, you arrested them, didn't let them talk, have a meet with Pakistani when you arrested them. And suddenly after that you arrested them. And now today you're saying that Huriyat is okay to talk. So now if you did that,
you
are
arrest
least,
people and then talk to them next day. So it's part of democracy.
At least you admit now. That's what I'm saying. At least you admit now that you were wrong that time.
This is standard policy. There is nothing to admit. This is standard policy.
You can't have a standard policy. This is no standard policy. Chandan Mitra, this is not a stand-up policy. You arrested them. You didn't let them use. You called out the
court on this issue. And other people, other political leaders, I'm trying to say.
Your minister says okay. They are
Indian.
Final
leaders.
Comments. Final comments. Meanwhile, over Farooq, quick words.
Other political leaders also arrested. So what is the word?
Okay, I'll allow Sushil. Just quick. Meanwhile, Omar Farooq, there's something you'd like to say to the BJP.
Just one more point.
Okay, Tanveer, quickly. I'm literally your last 2 minutes. 30 seconds.
It's been 2 years.
Yes.
It's been 2 years since this government has been formed. And not even once have they spoken to neither the state leaders nor at the external level. So now, I think not only the separatists, but they need to speak to the mainstream political
parties. Okay, I'm on the last 2 minutes. I need to start wrapping. Meanwhile, Omar Farooq, if there is a point you would like to make to the BJP leader, Chandan Mitra here, please go ahead as your last comment.
Yes, in fact, you know, the first point I want to make is that, you know, I don't understand why the Hurriyat is always seen as a roadblock or as an organization which wants to, create hurdles. I mean, we, in fact, you know, we have been saying it's in the interest of the people of Jammu and Kashmir that India and Pakistan should be talking. India and Pakistan, while talking Kashmir, have to involve Kashmiris. We are not saying that, you know, we are the only ones. Yes, Kashmir, this side of Kashmir, the other side of Kashmir. You have to involve
What is your question to Chandan? What is your question to Chandan? Because I'm in the last 2 minutes.
They are the people.
Okay.
So you need to engage with the people. And the second point I want to make is...
How do we know you represent the people?
let us take that issue to the people. If you are saying that we don't represent anybody and
there are elections, that's the best way of taking it to the people.
Why was the previous government talking to us?
Okay.
At that time, I can see a statement.
Sushil Pandit. Okay, I'm out of time. Sushil Pandit, the last word to Chandan.
See, no policy is written in stone and nobody expects government to blindly follow a given policy year after year. But the point is they must explain. Yeah. They must tell us what has changed. They must tell us why is this policy imperative necessary now. None of that happens. In fact, a small thing, just a week back, first we tom-tom giving visa to a gentleman called Isa.
Yeah.
Then we pull that visa back.
Yes.
3 days later we say, no, we gave visa to 8 others.
Yes.
This kind of chest thumping and then backtracking, and it's humiliating for a country our size, our stature and our stakes. I think we are oscillating from one extreme to the other and don't know why. What is that kind of instability in the policy?
I think that's something we can all agree with. These flip-flops are deeply embarrassing to India as a state. They may be inevitable sometimes, Chandan, but you would agree that they reflect the confusion. Chandan, quick last word, I've got to close.
No, I have no issue. Hurriyat, of course, Hurriyat should be talking... we should be talking to them, but I would still say that Hurriyat itself must establish its legitimacy.
We will have a separate show on what the nature of the peace process should be. I still feel that's a separate show.
But
on the flip flops,
I believe, Barkha, everybody should welcome the direction in which the government of India is moving over the last few months.
Okay.
I think we should all welcome.
I think there is a political paradox that the Modi government will have to encounter. It promised a new policy. Its supporters, its core base probably expected that. And this probably doesn't play to script. That is a political question for the Modi government to reflect on. Whereas we may all have different opinions on the best approach to a peace process for Jammu and Kashmir. Ambassador KC Singh, Sushil Pandit, Tanveer Sadiq, Chandan Mitra. Pleasure to have you on the Buck Stops here. We're moving on now to our other big story tonight. It's a video that's gone viral. It's by a young 19-year-old whom you'd probably never heard of till today. She's the daughter of a Kargil hero. She was 2 years old, but her father was martyred. Take a look at what she has to say.
We'll be right back.
So that extremely moving video that we just saw has literally gone viral, a young daughter's appeal for peace. In fact, we can bring up some shots from that video. In fact, she doesn't actually speak a word. She speaks through those posters that she's holding up. She's 19. She's somebody who was 2 years old when her father was, died, a hero in the Kargil War. She grew up conflating Muslims with Pakistanis, saw them as the enemy, and then evolved out of that to be a soldier for peace. Joining me now on the Buck Stops here is Gurmeher Kaur, the young woman we saw in that video. Gurmeher, I find the video extremely moving, extremely inspirational. And for someone as young as you, it shows a lot of maturity. At which point in your life did you decide that you had changed your mind, that your views had changed and you now wanted to be a soldier for peace?
So it was right after the Pathankot attacks. I was going through the newspapers and I saw this article, this news about a young soldier passing away during the Pathankot attacks. And he left behind a 3-year-old daughter and a very young wife. And for me, it was history repeating. I could see myself in that 3-year-old little girl. And it's brutal. War is brutal. Nobody tells you about what happened. Everybody talks about, war and passing away and being a shaheed. But nobody tells you what happens to the families.
Absolutely.
And I feel like there shouldn't be any more girls like me.
Absolutely. I think it's the families that get left behind. You're absolutely right. But, you were only 2 years old when your father died a hero in Kargil. It's a war I know well. I was in my 20s covering it. And it means a lot to me, therefore, what you're talking about today. One of the placards in your video very movingly says that your memories of your father are of not having a father rather than having one. How was it growing up like that?
It's actually very odd because, going to school was odd. I remember my first day to school, I was very excited when I was home because I really wanted to go to the school. And once I reached there, everybody else had two parents and I had one. And I start crying, not because I did not want to leave my mother, but because I felt I'm so different and where is my father? Why isn't he with me? So that was a shock.
But, initially as a child, you conflated all Muslims with Pakistanis. You didn't exactly perhaps understand what had happened, and you even went to try and stab a woman wearing a burqa. Is that correct? What happened exactly?
So I was at my mother's parents' place in Saharanpur, and you see a lot of women. In Punjab, you don't see a lot of women with burqas. So for me, it was a very in my head, I had always hated anybody with anything related to Islam or Pakistan or who is a Muslim with a cap or a burqa. And I saw all these women in burqas and I was so angry. I felt it must be their husbands or their brothers who must have killed my father because, they're in a burqa and they're related to Pakistan. And I went ahead and I tried to stab them because that's what a 6-year-old does. You have no idea about what goes, what has actually happened.
I mean, you were a 6-year-old child, right? So, but when did you understand that this is wrong, that it isn't one religion or it isn't one community or it isn't the people at least of one country who are the enemy? When did you understand that your anger was misdirected in a sense despite the awful tragedy you'd been through?
I remember my mother talking to me right after that incident. She was very shaken. Why a 6-year-old would do that? And she spoke to me, and after that it was an evolution. Like, I evolved as a person. I started reading more. I went on the internet. I read, and I realized it's not exactly people who hate each other. We as human are normal, and it's just this religion and whatever the hype that's surrounded by it. That's what brings the hatred. Hatred is taught. Nobody gets born with hatred for somebody else. Somebody has to come and feed you. Okay, you have to hate Pakistan. You have to hate India. Mm. So I feel like if we can just stop teaching hatred and start teaching peace, we would be a lot better, and there won't be any more girls like me.
One of the very powerful lines, Gurmeher, in your video is that Pakistan did not kill my father, war did. And, I always like to say that we have a kind of set of TV anchors who love being warmongers from their armchairs. But ask the soldiers who actually have to go to battle. They understand the cost of war. So when you held up that placard, Pakistan did not kill my father, war did. What did you mean?
For me, what I mean by that line is, Pakistan did not kill my father. Like, people of Pakistan did not kill my father. The situation that war killed him. The fact that he was in a war. Had he met somebody from Pakistan outside the war, they wouldn't go ahead and, you know, stab each other. It's just that particular situation which has happened and the kind of atmosphere or the things that were surrounding, that's what killed him.
But, you know, Gurmehar, what about terrorism? I mean, you know, people listening to you tonight are going to say, hey, you're 19, you're young, you're idealistic, you're a romantic, you've seen too many movies, you've read too many books. Look at the terrorism, institutionalized almost, that is coming from across the border. I mean, when you stand up there holding those placards, what would you say to people who say, Gurmehar, what about terrorism?
Terrorism can be countered by peace. If, you know, I feel terrorism is also taught. We see all these videos about young children being taken away by ISIS or when the 9/11 happened. You see these videos and they are being trained. I feel like hatred is taught. And if today I might be an idealistic, I might be a romantic, but I'm trying to go ahead and tell people, do not teach your children hatred. Teach them peace so that somebody else cannot come and manipulate their mind, so that they know what is right and what's wrong.
When did you decide to do this video and why did you decide to do it without the spoken word? I mean, you're essentially doing it, you know, through the visual articulation of those placards. So why did you decide not to speak?
So I did this video with Ram Subramanian and he's a director based in Mumbai. I met him through Facebook during this Profile for Peace campaign. And he felt like I've been through the aftermath of what happened with the war, I could be a good spokesperson for it. And then I went to Bombay and it was his idea to have placards instead of speaking, because, you know, sometimes words, written words speak louder than verbal words.
At which point, Gurmehar, did you understand that my enemy is not the Muslim, and especially, you know, not the Muslims of my country, your own countrymen? You see, honestly, at one point you thought all Muslims were the enemy. When did that change come for you?
True, yeah, that happened. So, it happened organically. I evolved. But then at this particular time, I was at this tournament and I played tennis. So it was an international tournament and I met these Pakistani tennis players there. And we were just sitting and talking. And I realized they read the same books. They listen to the same music. They watch the same TV shows. Their conversations revolve around the same topic as ours. So what's the difference? Why are they the enemies, or why are we their enemies?
Tell me a little bit about how you got to know your father in his absence. You know, I mean, I keep thinking of this two-year-old, as you say, whose memories are of not having a father instead of having one. How do you imagine him to be today? Do you think of him as a soldier on the war front? I mean, how do you, you know, your mother's obviously told you stories, his friends have told you stories. How do you visualize him today?
I would imagine him to be a very cool father, like I always think about it. And he must have been a wonderful man. From what people tell me, he was pretty aggressive. He was an angry person. That's what I've been hearing. But he had a heart of gold. I keep imagining, I wish I could know him better.
Yeah. I can only imagine how you feel. But what are your dreams for yourself, Gurmehar? You call yourself a soldier for peace. What do you dream of doing as you get older?
I've always wanted to join the army. And my personal dreams will always be, I want to make my father proud in whatever I do. I do plan to do English in my college and write a book about him. And just write, so that I feel books can change a lot. For me, books have changed a lot in my case, and I want to write a lot. I want to write books and I want to join the army too.
So you want to join the army and yet you want to be an ambassador for peace?
I want to be a soldier in the army to respect my dad. I want to take his legacy forward. But I also want to bring peace. I don't have issues with armies, or I have issues with the war. You know, it's not like you don't see anybody who's in the army going ahead and fighting for no reason. we all need the army to protect our country, you know, from, yes, in the borders. If you don't have army, you never know what might happen. So I want to protect my nation, but then I don't want to go ahead and kill people for no reason.
Of course. And
just for the sake of it.
And of course, as you know, no soldier would want to war if they had a choice, and that does not take away from their heroism at all. They just understand the cost of war.
Yeah, I've read a few of my father's letters to his brothers, and he was not somebody who wanted war. He missed home. He missed having, you know, water coming out of a tap instead of a river and all those things. So, yeah, I understand no soldier wants war.
What would your father write in those letters back home that you read as you grew up?
He would write about his situation and how he wished he was home, how he couldn't find a place to eat, how he couldn't find a place to drink water, how he wished he didn't have to do what he was doing, but it was his duty and he did what he had to do.
Yeah. And let me ask you in the end, what role would you like for yourself in the army? Big debate on women in combat. You're a feisty Punjabi. You want to go in for combat, as I would imagine you would?
So, yeah, I would want to go up and protect the country. I don't want to sit behind. I'm not scared
of
protecting the country.
Three cheers for that, Gurd Meher. I think, as you say, you want to honor your father, but in so many ways you've already done that. It's a pleasure to have you on the program, and we're all very proud of you.
Thank you so much.
All right. That is a story that does give you hope. A proud army soldier's daughter wants to join the army, but also wants to be a soldier for peace. That's it on the Buck Stops here. We'll see you tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Thanks for joining. Goodbye.